Today, we're going to talk about how to create a sales culture without being pushy or coming across as pushy. And the reality is pushiness as a salesman is just bad manners. You're prematurely closing the sale. You're trying to get after everybody and ask them to buy, buy, buy. But the reality is the reason why cultures have created a pushy environment is because if you ask enough people, someone's going to say yes. So really, it's like rewarding bad behavior. This is all a result of management allowing salespeople or salesmen and women to be pushy. If management holds their sales teams accountable, and if management trains their sales team, you can create a sales culture without anyone feeling like they're getting pushed on or that their sales culture is pushy. Welcome back, guys. Today we're going to talk to Harry about how a company can create a sales culture, their sales team, without being pushy or without the customer feeling like the salespeople are being pushy. Welcome back, Harry. Thanks for joining us.
Justin, always a pleasure.
So talk to me. Pushy salespeople. It's almost like everyone's fear, right? You go into a place, someone's being pushy, but the reality is every company wants to sell, right? So how does a company or an organization create a sales-focused culture or a customer engagement culture, whatever you want to call it, without their sales staff pushing or being pushy to customers that walk in?
Well, this is fun. I mean, this is, once again, my whole 10,000-foot view as opposed to being right in it, or my washing machine example. Instead of being in it, let's take a look at it. Mm-hmm. Okay? So pushiness and aggressiveness, first of all, it's just bad manners. It has nothing to do with anything other than just that. People who are aggressive and push people outside of their comfort zone are just people with bad manners. Now, let's talk about how bad manners come about. First of all, you could just have bad manners in life. Mm-hmm. How's that? I mean, people with just bad manners.
Never taught.
Yeah, that's part of it. And they're also not aware that they have bad manners, which is, I suppose, partly due to training, right, as taught, or just the awareness you have as a person. Mm-hmm. In any event, let's talk about what the common beliefs are. The first common belief is that if salespeople are paid commission, that therefore they'll be pushier. Okay, mm-hmm. There's just no question about that. We know that it manifests itself in people saying, well, I don't want to be a salesperson. I don't want to be pushy. You've heard that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like sales. I don't like pushing things on people. I don't like manipulating people. We hear that all the time. And we also hear retailers that say, look, you know, we sell like a team. We're a family. We don't, you know, pay commission. We don't want our customers abused. Well, I just absolutely detest those answers. It's ridiculous. It's not true. What is true is that management has allowed people to behave a certain way, regardless of their pay. Some of the finest retail stores I've ever been in my life, and some of the great presentations that have been made to me. I mean, I never stop to think about how the person's going to get paid. It doesn't really matter to me. I mean, you're probably a little too young, but back in my day, you know, we had paper boys and paper girls. I was one for a while, and you drive around the neighborhood and throw papers in people's front yard, and then once a month you would get off the bike and get the money, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, Mr. Smith, you owe me $10, right? And Mr. Smith doesn't stop to think, I wonder what Johnny's cut is of the $10, you know? Like, you know, I wonder if this guy's getting too much juice. You know, maybe I can get this thing for $9 a month instead of $10 a month. You know, maybe Johnny's making too much money. I mean, these aren't even considerations, right? It never dawns on anybody. So when things are done well, there's never a thought of how the salesperson gets compensated, ever. let's get that straight. And there's no excuse for bad behavior, no matter how anybody gets paid. I mean, do you ever think of your doctor and think of what his cut is after the insurance? I mean, no. I mean, it's like, well, let's, I don't think we think about people's cut when things are, you know, their share when things are done right.
I don't think we want to think about it in certain situations like the doctor specifically.
Yeah, but we don't think about doctors being in business, but they are a business. And yeah. And so are dentists. Dentists feel a lot more comfortable adding on like crazy than doctors do. And chiropractors are like, wow, they're like the used car people of the world when it comes to selling additional stuff. You know, I went to my dentist. This is funny. I went to my dentist last week, and the guy starts pulling out the lead radiation cover because he's going to do some x-rays. And I looked at him and I said, how often do you like to do x-rays? He says, you know, every year or so. I said, well, you know, why don't you look at your records, because you just did me 6 months ago and I don't really see a need. Nothing has changed radically. And he went and checked and said, you're right. But he was so willing to do the x-rays, right? So willing to do the x-rays. And they're not free, right?
No. Look, I get sold on that fluoride treatment every single time, and I keep forgetting to say no. But every single time, like, do you want the fluoride to strengthen your teeth? I was like, well, who doesn't? This guy doesn't, but I always do.
Yeah, and that has a little bit to do with credibility, the salesperson having credibility and expertise, and you just go, yeah, well, if you recommend it, I'm going to do it, mm-hmm. which is a whole other subject. So if we want to talk about in truth, pushiness generally comes from organizations that have a sales culture. Now, it's not always the case, but let's talk about what is a sales culture. A sales culture has some attributes to it that are absolutely essential. Number one, salespeople are held individually accountable for their sales. That begins a sales culture. Number two, we identify sub-metrics to understand their performance, either successes or failure. For example, we know what their average sale is. We know what their sales per hour is. If you're a high performance retailer, we even know conversion rate. In other words, we know the batting average of a salesperson. We know that if he talks to 10 people and he sells two, he has a 20% conversion rate. That's 2 out of 10, 20%, or in baseball, we would say batting 200. We know these things typically. In a high-performance retail environment, there might even be a turnover, meaning that if you can't make the sale, we might call in for some extra help and turn it over. We might know these things and help salespeople perform at a higher level as a result of having this data. So these are high-performance stores. When you have a high-performance store and the salesperson is earning their income by sales, as their sales go up, their income goes up, there's a lot of attention paid to their success. Mm-hmm. The sales manager is probably paid a percentage of the sales some way or another, either based on what the salespeople do individually or as the group. And he says, well, wow, I mean, if I get these guys to sell more, I can make more, right? And a lot of times these organizations are top-down managed, not bottom-up managed, meaning that the sales manager gets real cranky when sales goals are not hit, gets real cranky. And he goes up to the salesperson and says, hey, Bob, you need to sell more, right? You need to sell more. You're killing me, man. You need to sell more. How could you let that last customer leave? I mean, you need to sell more. You need to sell more. And this guy keeps swinging, right? He just keeps swinging and swinging and swinging. And that swinging oftentimes is what the aggressive or pushy attribute looks like. That's a salesperson swinging. Mm-hmm. So we know some things. We know some things. In retail, we know that out of 100 presentations, typically 20% of the time, the customer actually says, I'll take it. I love those kind of customers. Right? Even you can't stop them from buying, right? They're on a mission.
Yeah.
I love those people. Right. So 20 out of 100 times the customer's on a mission or they say, I'll take it. 20 times out of 100, the salesperson actually gets around to saying, would you like to buy it? Now, we're not even talking about how he would do that. Right. So there's a million different closing techniques, but somehow or another, he gets around to saying, hey, would you like it? And the most frightening statistic of all is 60 times out of 100, no attempt is made to close the sale. No attempt. Forget about it. Forget about swinging and missing. No attempt. So if we believe that stat, and I actually think it's worse than that, if we believe that stat and say salespeople aren't even closing, if we run a sales organization where we actually ask people or ask our staff to close the deal, right? Ask. But they're not very good at it, they would appear to be very, very pushy. And particularly when customers are so used to not being asked, if this guy asks at all, even in a nice way, sometimes it could be perceived as pushy or aggressive.
So just to take a step back so everybody listening understands, and so I understand, the 6% that don't actually try to close the sale at all, how are you defining closing the sale? Or making us, is it literally just making the suggestion? Is it even engaging with the customer? At what point do you determine that they've made no attempt? How do you define no attempt?
Well, no attempt is no attempt. I mean, this is not, we're not a library. You know, the librarian comes by and you're looking at a book and they say, wow, that's really a wonderful book. I read it a couple of years ago. I really enjoyed it. And then they keep walking, you know? that's kind of what I'm saying. It's an action. It's an action. There's a lot of different kinds of closing techniques. I mean, it could be as subtle as taking the item and start walking to the register and the customer follows you. It's called the assumptive close. I mean, it's crazy. But yeah, you would know the difference between someone who closed the sale and someone who just makes a presentation and leaves it at that. Mm-hmm. And the customer could say things like, well, thank you very much for showing it to me. I appreciate it. And the salesperson says, no problem, and walks away. Think about how many times that's happened to you. I mean, do you have any hungadungas? And the salesperson, yeah, absolutely. Walks over, shows the hungadunga, doesn't engage, and the presentation's over. And the salesperson walks back to the sales manager and says they weren't interested. Well, that's not what happened. So getting back to our theme for the day, which is pushiness and aggressiveness, I've always defined it as a lack of technique and a lack of understanding of the sales process. Mm-hmm. And there's two parts to a sales process. There's greeting a customer, opening the sale through to a demonstration where you're actually presenting the merchandise. And we call that the front half or the front end of the sale. And the second part of the sale is after the demonstration through the collection of money, right, through closing the sale and thanking the customer, and that we call the back end of the sale. And if one were to study a sales presentation in those two parts as opposed to a global presentation, the whole thing, we start to see where the meltdown is. And if you were to go so crazy and care so much about your success, you would actually have two different conversion rates, two different close percentages. You would have the greeting to a demo as a close percentage, and then the demo to a final close, which would be another conversion percentage. And if you were to study those things, as I have for many, 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 many moons, you would find that salespeople have a tendency to lose the sale up front, not behind.
Interesting.
So it's not their closing techniques or their ability to handle objections. I'll be back. I'll think it over. I'll shop around. Your price is too high. I've got to talk to my wife, my dog, the neighbor. That's not generally the problem. The problem is the foundation of the sale, which is to say that you create a person-to-person relationship. You actually do some probing to find out what they want, what their hopes, their dreams, their aspirations are, why they want the item, which is more important than the what. You make a demonstration that gets them fired up, You know, when a customer's fired up and there's a match, you know, their hopes and dreams, and they're actually seeing it in front of them. Mm-hmm. To some greater or lesser degree, they just turned on by it, right? It's just that simple. We could get detailed later, but I mean, do they want to touch it and feel it and play with it and try it on and all the other things? They want to be involved. And you could tell when someone's just tripping on an item. After that, then it's a matter of who in the world would buy a book that had 11 chapters and throw it away after you read 10. I mean, I believe you've done a century on a bike, right? You did a century ride. I think you did, didn't you?
If you consider it over 2 days, a century.
All right. So you did a couple metric centuries or whatever the heck it was. But if you were to do a century ride, which is the bicycle person's kind of equivalent to a marathon. All right, let's just take a marathon runner. It's 26.2 miles. I mean, who in the world would want to quit after 25? Right? You just can't even imagine. It would be that's where you see runners crying. Maybe they just completely ran out of gas, but you don't quit when you have that much of an investment, do you?
No.
Most of us don't. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, if you were to invest in the front side of a sale, which is get to a customer to a point of, you know, breathing hard and heartbeat goes up and they're kind of excited about it, I think you'll know what to do. And it wouldn't need to be pushy, and it wouldn't need to be aggressive, and it wouldn't need to put the customer at ill ease. So that's where that comes from. And if the management team appreciates the upfront part of selling and developing relationships, they will not have an organization that is perceived as pushy or aggressive.
Yeah, topic for another day, but sort of the power of the sales manager and the role they play in creating the sort of sales culture and holding their team accountable for things like properly opening the sale, not being pushy. I mean, that it's going to fall on the manager's shoulders, the sales manager's shoulders.
Yeah. You know, my best analogy or metaphor has always been the conductor of a symphony orchestra. That's just, you know, it's a matter of taking these outstanding musicians and getting them so in sync that the music sounds beautiful. Mm-hmm. And there are some conductors that are just flat out better than others. And some performances that, you know, put tears in your eyes. They're so magnificent. And it's kind of like a band also. Mm-hmm. You know, the individuals have to be good. They have to play their role. They have to be successful. To the degree that the individuals are successful in a band is to the degree that the band sounds good. Is it any different than on a sales floor?
No, it's not.
But if the guitarist or the piano player or the drummer or whatever band it is getting aggressive and just, you know, just going
just wailing on a thing, right?
Or they do the final movement before the, you know, the band actually, you know, it's the first movement and they're already, you know, finishing the song. I mean, it's a little wonky.
Well, Harry, final thoughts on creating a sales culture that's not pushy in the eyes of the consumer?
Well, first of all, you have to set up a sales culture, and that originally is done through the accountability of salespeople and how they're paid. This is the United States. This is America. Now, I know the millennials, you youngsters, think a little bit differently than some of us older, tried and true, mature adults think. However, the truth is, we're a country that somehow, some way, somewhere along the line said, if you work hard, if you keep your nose to the grindstone and you really rock it, you learn some things, you have an opportunity to be very successful in this country. I really believe that's true. I believe that if I do more, perform better, right, and kick some butt, that I'm going to be compensated for that. That's our core belief. And if you take two salespeople on the floor and one is outselling the other by 2-1, and yet the one that's underperforming makes a buck or two or $10 or $20 more an hour just because they've been there longer, Wow. I think you need to pack your bags and move to Cuba. That's not America. So I don't just think that we need to have productivity-based pay. Some people call it commission. You call it whatever you like. But it's where people get rewarded for their performance. I mean, that starts the conversation. Now you have a sales culture and it's fair. It makes sense. Now it's a matter of reeling them in and getting them to go in a common direction, not unlike the symphony or the band conductor. You know, if you were to take a great symphony orchestra, the New York Philharmonic, Los Angeles Philharmonic, I mean, these are great orchestras. Most of the players are so good, certainly first chair, which means the number one violinist, the number one cellist. These guys have their own CDs. I mean, it's not just in the band. These guys are soloists and phenomenal performers on their own right. But they do give up a little bit of their style to work together towards a common goal. I think that sales management can cause that to happen as long as it's a sales culture. And that culture first is on accountability, second on pay, third on direction, and what is allowable in terms of sales performance on the floor. So that's what this is all about. Those are the final thoughts. And you have the right as an employer to choose how you want your people to behave. You actually have that right under federal law. And I would choose people to perform at a very high level through empathy, great presentations, and personal relationships with their customers. You can't lose when you care about your customer and you want to do the right thing, both for the customer and for the store.
You have been listening to Retail Revisited. If our conversation today inspired you, please be sure to rate us on iTunes or share us with your friends. You can see a full list of all our episodes at thefriedmangroup.com. And for more information on how the Friedman Group can transform your business, you can contact us at sales@thefriedmangroup.com. A special thanks to Harry J. Friedman for sharing his 35 years of unbelievable experience for all of us to hear.